Welcome to Murder at Land Between the Lakes. I am your host, Amelia Courtney, along with Lainey Sullivan. This is Season 3, Unsolved.
Hi, listeners, and welcome back. Today we have an interview, a very special interview, with Casey Robinson. She is sister to Jennifer Wicks and the aunt to Andriana Wicks. You may remember a while back we covered their case. We just reached the 20-year mark of their disappearance. They disappeared March 25th, 2004. So listen in as Casey tells us the story from her own words from beginning to end. And it'll end with where we're at today, where the case is now heated up, and it just seems like there may be some answers to come soon. Hey, listeners, and welcome back. This is Amelia here, and today I have Casey Robinson on the phone with us. She is sister to Jennifer Wicks and aunt to Andriana Wicks, who went missing March 25th, 2004 in Cross Plains, Tennessee. You may or may not have seen on the news lately on our social media, there's a lot going on in this case. So we have covered this case before, but I'd like you all to hear it directly from Casey. So Casey, thank you so much for coming on.
Hey, Amelia, I'm good. Thank you so much for having me, too.
Yeah, so let's just start from the beginning, if you don't mind, and let our audience hear it from you about, you know, leading up to the day Jennifer and Andriana went missing, and let's start there.
Okay, yeah. I don't know how far back you want me to go. I always like to just give a little bit of a backstory just so everyone can kind of understand Jennifer's relationship, why she was living with her boyfriend and his parents at the time, but I'll try to make that brief and like get up to the week of their disappearance pretty quickly. But Jennifer and Andriana is my niece. She was 2, Jennifer was 21. They disappeared, like you said, March 25th, 2004. Jennifer met Joey Benton, who was her boyfriend at the time. She met him in July of 2003. And they met through my cousin, and my cousin and him were friends, and Jennifer met him, and they kind of started moving quickly, and my mom and I lived in Las Vegas at the time. My mom had taken a job out in Vegas, and so I lived out there with her, but my other two sisters were here, still living in Cross Plains, Springfield area with some of our other relatives. But so Jennifer and Joey started dating, things moving quickly. I mean, she would stay over at his house a lot, and he had like this shed on his property. It was like a barn shed thing, like what you would see like at Lowe's or Home Depot or wherever. Mm-hmm. Kind of like a big shed though, like, I don't know, like a 15 by 18 shed, something like that, that they had turned into a studio apartment. And they had like hung drywall on the wall, even though it wasn't finished. It wasn't like mudded and smooth drywall. It was just kind of like hung up there like makeshift, and carpet on the ground, and they had a bed in there and run electricity out there. So there was, you know, a small little window air unit and a fridge and things like that. So my sister would stay with him a lot while we were in Vegas, but something happened while we were there in October 2003, I believe is whenever this started happening. But my sister called my mom one day, and she was frantic. She was very upset. She had just been dropped off at her granny's house. Her dad's mom lived close by. She mm-hmm. called her Granny Wicks. Mm-hmm. And she called from her house, and she had just been dropped off there. Something had crazy had just happened. And, you know, my mom's like, what's going on? And Jennifer's like, well, you know, I was over there, and Joey started acting weird. He pulled out a gun. He threatened himself and me and Andriana, and he told his mom to, you know, get us out of here, take me out of here. So she ended up getting a ride from his mom, and his mom drove her over to her granny's house, and then that's when she called my mom. And after that point, with her being as terrified as she was and just saying, like, I don't know, he was just so upset and erratic, and my mom within like a week or two was like, we're going back home. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, it was like, I'm telling you, like a week later, all our stuff was packed in Las Vegas, and we were living back home again. Very quick, just mom's intuition, you mm-hmm. know, she's like, I gotta get home to my baby. So we get back to Cross Plains, and so we're living in my grandmother's old house she had, and it was vacant at the time. And she let us move in. Jennifer and Adriana moved into the bottom in the basement. It was like a two-bedroom basement apartment type deal. Didn't have a kitchen, but it was really nice. Had their own bathroom, living area, and everything. And Jennifer and Joey had split up and weren't really talking a lot, had broken up, if you will. And she started talking to him again in November and a lot more in December. And so right before Christmas in 2003, I guess they had gotten more serious and she decided to go back with him. Mm-hmm. And Joey showed up at our house, which he was not allowed to be there just after what had happened with the gun situation. And he showed up at our house and Jennifer had packed hers and Adriana's things, and he was downstairs helping them get their things, and they were moving out with him. And of course my mom went down there and was right in the middle of them like packing up everything, and she's like, what are you doing? You know, you can't go with him. You told me they've got drugs, they've got guns everywhere within arm's reach. And she's like, it's not good for you, it's not good for the baby, you know. And then Jennifer's not listening, and she turns to Joey, and I'm right there beside him, and she turns to Joey and she's like, what, this is not a good environment for my daughter, you can't take my daughter. And he just looks at my mom and is like, you don't have a daughter anymore, bitch. Like, and I just remember the look in his eyes that day. Like, he, I don't know, Amelia, it was like a blank, like
hollow. Just,
I can't even describe that look. And I was 15 at the time, and I just remember looking like, oh my gosh, like I've never seen anyone look like that in my life. Well, we continued up the stairs, you know, into the living room, and he had taken some of the things of Jennifer's and Adriana's out to his truck and was putting them in the truck, and we shut and locked the door behind him, you know. And then me, my other sister, and my mom and Adriana were inside, and we're trying to stop her from going, and she's refusing, like, no, I'm going with him. And things start to get physical, and we're like physically trying to stop her from going at this point, like, don't leave. And I just remember grabbing Adriana, you know, things, everyone was yelling, it was just crazy and traumatic. And I just grab Adriana and like run into the back bedroom. She's crying and of course upset with everything going on, and I call 911. And next thing I know, I hear Jennifer yelling for Joey, you know, help me, you know, because we're trying to stop her from leaving. And he kicks down our door, like completely off the hinges, just kicks down our front door of our house and grabs Jennifer, and they get in his truck and they leave without Adriana. And later, he doesn't come back to our house, but his mom and Jennifer come back, they get Adriana, and they go with them. And that's whenever they moved in with the Bentons at that time. And so that was a couple days before Christmas in 2003. And, you know, one of the most traumatic days of my life. I just remember it so vividly, like I was there yesterday. Just kind of like burned into my memory. But after that time, Adriana's birthday was coming up in January. It's January 14th, and she was going to turn 2. And we didn't see them for Christmas, and we didn't see them for New Year's, and we did not see them for Adriana's birthday. And Jennifer wasn't really speaking to us at that time, wasn't talking to my mom either, where she would normally talk to her almost every day.
Right.
And just like that, you know, going down at our house, and my mom, you know, we called the police and we filed a report. So we were in the middle of like court proceedings and hearings and whatnot for that too. And so we didn't really see them a lot until like mid-February-ish. She started reaching out to my mom again, and she found out that, you know, my mom was planning my sweet 16 birthday party. My mom and I share a birthday, February 22nd. Uh-huh. And so that's kind of like the time whenever I remember Jennifer coming back around. So it was a little bit over a month that we didn't really see or hear from them.
Okay.
And they were just kind of part of their family, you know. But around my birthday, I just remember everything from my sweet 16 birthday party at the house being set up, inviting some friends over. And I remember Joey stopping on like the curb of our house and letting Jennifer and Adriana out and them coming inside for just a little bit to say hi and happy birthday to mom and me. And then after that, that's like the only memory that I have of seeing them before the week of their disappearance. And I feel like that there probably was a little bit more that I saw her. I remember a little bit, like my other sister and I worked at McDonald's at the time. She's 2 years older than me, and we both worked there. And I remember working there, and Jennifer and Joey would bring Adriana like into the play place. And like Jennifer would never come by herself anymore to see mom and to see us. So they would come to McDonald's because he wasn't allowed at our house. And so I feel like in between that February and March, the week of their disappearance, like there was probably that happening. But I don't remember seeing them a lot. Just my birthday is like that last memory.
When he dropped her off, when he dropped the two of them off for your birthday, did he sit outside and wait? And like they just had a short time? Okay.
Yeah, just kind of like, yeah, sure, I'll take you to go see him. And he knew he wasn't allowed in our house just with, you know, I think we had filed, like, trespassing and things like that. And so he just wasn't allowed there. So he just kind of, like, sat and waited. And, you know, I don't know, always felt like, I don't know, looking back, I'm like, could we have gotten past that eventually and then, like, actually worked things out? I don't know. But that's, like, where everything left off is us just really, I don't know, not communicating with him and not really, like, agreeing with their relationship. And it almost seemed, like, kind of controlling in a way. Like, she relied so heavily on us as a family, like, for money and food and buying things for Adriana. Like, my mom, Easter was coming up. My mom had already bought her little Easter dress and her little Easter shoes. Like, Jennifer didn't have a job, so she relied on us. And it's almost like she had replaced us in a way with him, you know. So if she needed to get somewhere, he would take her. And if she needed to call someone, use my phone. If you need money, here's mine, you know. So it's almost like he just kind of, like, kept her to himself kind of thing. At that time.
Yeah, it definitely seems like a control thing. If he, like, the fact that he just, you know, let her go in and come back out. I mean, he could have left and come back.
Yeah.
But it seems like he wanted to make sure everything was on his terms.
Yeah. And it definitely was not like, yeah, go hang out with your family for a little bit. I'll be back, you know, babe. Nothing like that. It's like, yeah, stop in and say hey, and then let's get on with what we're doing, you know. Definitely. In March, I kind of like to give like the whole week perspective because there's a couple things leading up to the day that we last heard from Jennifer, and they're important with everything that's going on right now. Mm-hmm. And so Monday would have been Monday, March 22nd, 2004. My mom remembers getting a phone call super late at night. Had to have been like 10. I know that they, I have medical records that show that they were at the ER around 11 o'clock. And Jennifer called and said, mom, you know, something's wrong with Adriana. She's not feeling well. She's very lethargic. She's out of it. She's crying, saying it hurts whenever she goes pee. She's not peeing a lot. And so my mom's like, well, take her to the doctor. And my sister's like, I've tried. No one here will take me to the doctor. So she's at Joey's parents' house. And at this time, they were not living in this barn shed thing anymore because in the middle of the winter, especially in Tennessee, it gets really cold at night. And so they had moved in with him and his parents in like this little brick, like ranch style house, like a little 3-bedroom, 2-bath, kitchen, living room. And there was a room for them. And then a room for his parents, Joe and Cindy, they had their own room. And then there was like a little third bedroom where they were letting Adriana stay. And Joey had made her like this little toddler bed. And so no one in the house that night, and Joey's mom, Cindy, she works in the medical field. I don't know if she was an actual nurse, But I know, I mean, like, she retired from Vanderbilt, you know, Medical Center, the mm-hmm. hospital here. And so she comes from that background. And, you know, she had asked, my sister had asked Cindy, you know, what do you think? You know, should I take her? And she's like, ah, she'll be fine, you know, kind of thing. Just kind of brush it off. But Jennifer's like, no, like, my baby needs to go. So my mom's like, take her to the doctor. And Jennifer's like, no one here will take me. So my mom said, well, do you want me to come and take y'all? And Jennifer said, no, they don't like you. You're not allowed here. Again, with everything that had went on, you know, the prior December. And so my mom was like, okay, we'll call your Aunt Lisa. And that's my mom's sister. Mm-hmm. And my Aunt Lisa lived like, I don't know, maybe like 2 miles down the road. So within 5 minutes on the main road, going from Springfield into Cross Plains, which is kind of important for later. But Jennifer calls her and she takes her. So they go to North Crest Medical in Springfield, which is where Adriana was born. And they run some tests, and it comes back that she has an infection. And we didn't find this out until whenever I picked up the case a couple years ago, we were able to get the records, but she had vaginitis, which is not common in 2-year-old babies. And my mom remembers getting a call from Jennifer on the way home that night. It was like in the early, early morning hours of Tuesday, so like 2-3 o'clock in the morning after they leave the hospital. And Jennifer says, you know, they ran some tests, she's got an infection. And she's like, Mom, the nurse said, like, this is not a common infection for little 2-year-olds. It's like more common in sexually active adult women. And my aunt was there and heard that conversation too. And so my mom's like, okay, we'll take her to the pediatrician, you know, for follow-up the next day. And so Tuesday, you know, my aunt has to go to work, but Jennifer calls her Granny Wicks that, you know, she had went to her house the previous October when everything was happening. And she was like maybe 10 minutes away, but Jennifer was very, very close to the Wick side of the family, like very close. And even though her dad lives, like, her dad and my mom are, of course, not together anymore, but he lives in Manchester, which is south of Nashville a little bit. And then, but he's from there. And so his parents still live there, maybe like 10, 15 minutes away from where Jennifer lived at the time mm-hmm. with the Bentons. And so Jennifer called her on Tuesday to ask her to take Adriana and her to the pediatrician. So she does, and the pediatrician, you know, looks over Adriana and says, yes, she does have this infection. It's not common, but it can also be something like wearing your diaper too long. You know, so that was that as far as anything kind of run on Adriana as far as tests or anyone reporting anything. Nothing was ever reported to officials. Nothing like that. And I'm not sure if it were reported, what would have come of it, especially with what's going on today. But
I would just have to ask you, do you feel like the hospital, when they came that night, had a responsibility to maybe report that?
Possibly. You know, I don't know. We've never talked to the nurses on staff that night, but of course, my mom remembers the conversation on the way home. My aunt remembers that conversation, and we don't speak to that side of the family, but she remembers it happening. You know, but I don't know if that person, you know, actually said that or not. You know, it was 20 years ago. As far as in the medical records that we have anyway, they're, because I got them like literally 2 years ago, they're very like abbreviated. They're mm-hmm. not like the full doctor's notes or anything like that, mm-hmm. you know? So, and I know law enforcement got the medical records like whenever it first happened. So perhaps they've already talked to that nurse, or the doctor or whatever. I'm just not sure. But I mean, yeah, I feel like if my sister felt like that enough to tell my mom that on the way home, then, you know, if that conversation did happen, absolutely, they had a responsibility. Mm-hmm. And you know, if Jennifer and Adriana hadn't have disappeared a couple of days later, you know, would there have been more tests run, and would something would have, you know, come of that? I don't know. I feel like maybe. Mm-hmm. But I just think they didn't get the chance to get there. I don't think that she ever really recovered from that infection, because the next day, on March 24th, is the last day that my mom talks to Jennifer. Well, actually, Amelia, on Tuesday, after Jennifer saw the pediatrician, she met up with my mom. Joey drove Jennifer and Adriana into Cross Plains from Springfield. So Jennifer and Adriana in the Benton house is in Springfield. Mm-hmm. And so if anyone sees those two towns used in our case, it kind of takes place in both. But they lived in Springfield, but kind of like right on the line. It's about to turn into Cross Plains. Okay. And so he drove Jennifer into Cross Plains where we lived and met us at the Dollar General, met my mom at the Dollar General. And my mom had made like this diaper cream. And it's like a homemade diaper cream because Adriana had, you know, a little rash down there and it was hurting. And so, you know, my mom met them and she just remembers Adriana just looking awful and pitiful, she said, and like crying for her, you know, I want to go with you, Mimi, I want to go with you. And my mom just being like, I gotta work, baby, you know, you can't come with me right now, you gotta go with mom, but you know, maybe this weekend or maybe next weekend, you know. But my mom just didn't know that was like the last time that she would see them, you know. So of course, like, one of the worst days and memories ever that my mom has with all of this. And I mean, she'll tell you, like, I wish I would have taken her with me that day. But on the next day, on Wednesday, Jennifer was at home with the Bentons, and I guess they had had dinner and everything that night. Things were getting like really tense in there, you know, after the girls' disappearance. Like, we understood a little bit more what was going on in the house, just from different people that knew them and that she had been talking to. But she called my mom that night. My mom was like getting ready to lay down for the night. I got off work, and Jennifer calls the house, and my other sister Heather answers, and she's crying, she's upset, and can hear the baby crying. She hands the phone to my mom. My mom's like, what's going on? And my mom can hear the baby crying in the background and someone yelling at Jennifer. She can't, you know, really tell who. She's like, who's that? What's all that yelling, you know? And Jennifer's like, I've got the door locked, you know, I'm in mine and Joey's room. There's just been a lot of fighting tonight. And my mom's like, with who? And she's like, well, Joey's parents. And my mom's like, well, where's Joey? And he's in the other room, passed out in the floor. They were trying to sleep train Adriana, which I don't know if you've ever, you know, did sleep training with a baby, but having kids myself now, I can understand where Jennifer was coming from. But she told my mom, you know, he's in the other room with Adriana, he's passed out though, but he can withstand her crying, where I just like kind of break down and bring her back in bed with me. And so we're trying to teach her to sleep in her bed, and so she's screaming and crying and basically crying herself to sleep. And she's like, well, who's doing all the yelling? Well, that's Cindy. And why, you know, what's going on? And she says, all night that they've been going on at me, telling me, you know, I'm a terrible mom, I'm a worthless mother, you know, Joey shouldn't be in there taking care of the baby, he shouldn't be pretending to be Adriana's dad. And said she even threw our dinner out on the ground out the kitchen door and said, just eat your dinner off the ground like dogs do. And just crazy stuff. And my mom's like, well, where's Joe? And, you know, he's normally really nice to me, Jennifer said, but tonight he is even getting in my face. And so there was just a lot going on that night, a lot of tension. I don't know exactly what they were fighting about that night. You know, over the years, and just our family like pouring over this over and over and over again, just my mom trying to recall that conversation that night and just remembering what Jennifer said. You know, she was upset the baby was crying so loudly, that Joey was the one in there putting the baby to bed when he's not Adriana's dad. Like, he shouldn't be pretending that. And I think just really, I've lived with my boyfriend's parents before. Like, it, things can get tense, you know, mm-hmm. if you're living with anyone, even relatives sometimes, you know. And I think that's what was happening. And then a lot of people have told us, you know, after their disappearance, like, that his mom didn't like Jennifer, that she was jealous of her, and that she had, like, this really, really oddly close relationship with her son, and that she just didn't like, you know, this girl coming around, and then this girl has a baby that's, you know, that they're getting serious. And so I don't know what it had to do with, but I just know that it was happening, and there was yelling, and they were, you know, being awful to them that night. So my mom's like, Jennifer, tonight is not the night to sleep train the baby with all this going on. She's like, just go in there and get her. Well, I'll stay on the phone with you. So, you know, she goes in there, gets Adriana, comes back in the room, and, you know, my mom just kind of remembers, like, that last conversation with her right before they hang up. And Jennifer's like, oh, Mom, she just laid her little head down, and all she wanted was me. And she hears Adriana, like, quiet down and, you know, do her little, you know, like, her little whimpers before she falls asleep. And then my mom's like, Jennifer, do you need me to come and get you? And again, no, Mom, you're not welcome here. I don't want anything to get worse than it already is. She's like, no, I'll be okay. I can take care of this. And my mom's like, okay, well, try and get some rest, you know, stay out of their way. And Jennifer's like, okay, well, I'll call you tomorrow. And she never did. So that was the last conversation that Jennifer and my mom, my side of the family, had. Mm-hmm. The last contact with her.
You know, I didn't realize, I don't know why I didn't realize it until now, that all of this happened in less than a year, right? The whole thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
From
it was all
when
very
they started
quick
dating.
And
yeah.
Yeah. Just very, that's why I like to give kind of that backstory, because it's like there were so many red flags, like, leading up to it, where, you know, my mom, like, desperately tried, like, to keep her from going and being a part of that, you know, but Jennifer was in love. And so many people, Amelia, will tell you, you know, that knew Joey and heard him talk about Jennifer and saw him with Jennifer and Adriana will say, like, he loved them. Mm-hmm. He, you know, made Adriana, like, handmade her that little toddler bed. And for Christmas, I have pictures of her, the Christmas that we missed with her. I have pictures of Adriana at his family's Christmas with this wooden rocking horse that he made for her. So apparently, like, there was some kind of, like, love there, and, you know, he cared about them. And so I don't know, that's something that we've battled with, like, over the years, trying to figure out what happened to them. And, like, there's all these red flags popping up, but I don't know, like, I go back and forth, like, on, did he do something to them or not?
Yeah, I'm sorry, and it also seems like they were, I don't want, prisoner is not the right word, but, like, being held prisoner there, but yet they didn't want them there.
Yeah.
Like, I can't,
I think it was more that, like, Joey wanted them there.
Okay.
You know, but it doesn't sound like his mother did.
Mm-hmm.
And again, like, I was younger than her at the time, so this is me just kind of, like, rehashing everything from my mom's point of view and my other family members' points of view, and just going over, like, tons of, like, journals that my mom kept, and of every conversation she had with everyone. And, you know, so it was not me and my personal memory, but, you know, that's what it sounds like to me, is that he, you know, was in a relationship with her, cared and about them and loved them. And I even heard recently a detail that I had not heard before, but after their disappearance, my aunt ran into him at a store somewhere there in town and was talking to him about it, about the disappearance, and just asking him some more questions. And he pulled out his wallet out of his back pocket, opened it up, pulled out a picture of Adriana, and showed it to my aunt, and was like, I didn't do it. And he was like, I loved them. And just the fact that he, like, carries that photo in his wallet just kind of makes me be like, you know. And the next day, on Thursday, March 25th, is the day. March 24th comes up a lot because that's the last time my mom spoke to Jennifer. Mm-hmm. But the last time anyone in my family spoke to her, and we know that, you know, they were alive, is March 25th. And so this is the day that I think something happened to my sister and my niece, and that they were no longer with us. Mm-hmm. And so on Thursday, that whole week, Joey worked for his dad's friend, and they were working out of town in Franklin, Kentucky, which is not far from there. I always thought it was like 45 minutes to an hour, but where they were living, it was like 25, 30 minutes, but still like a pretty good drive. And so his truck at the time was broke down, and he got a ride that day with my cousin Jeffrey, the one that introduced Jennifer and Joey. Mm-hmm. And so Joey and his friends would, like, all work for this guy. And so I got a ride with Jeffrey that day. Jennifer and Adriana were at home. And Jennifer, of course, did not have a cell phone or anything like that of her own. So she's using the Benton home phone to make calls to people. And that's what she would do, Melia. She would literally, like, call around. So anyone who watched children for a living or is a stay-at-home mom can understand, like, you need that, like, adult interaction. So she would, like, call around to friends and family all day. Mm-hmm. You know, so while Adriana's toddling around watching cartoons and what, she's talking to people. So around 11 o'clock that day, she calls her dad. And this phone call is confirmed with law enforcement, by the way. There's another phone call that I haven't confirmed, but I like everyone to know about that one, too. So at 11 o'clock, she talks to her dad for, like, 30 minutes. And on this phone call, which it wasn't normal for her to call him during the day, he says that she would normally call, like, in the evenings because he knows, or she knows, that he works during the day. But it was weird for her to call and talk for so long in the middle of the day, he says. And I haven't talked to him in full detail. This is just my mom's memory of him telling what happened. Mm-hmm. So they're on the phone for like 30 minutes, and he remembers hearing cartoons in the background. He can hear the baby, and Jennifer's telling him about the arguing from the night before and everything that was going on. And Jennifer's like, "I'm scared, Dad." And he's like, "Of who? What's going on?" And she's like, "Of Joey's mom. She's acting weird." And he's like, "Well, call someone to come and get you. Call, you know, your granny. Call your mom." And she's like, "No, Joey's going to be home soon. We're going on a picnic." And during that phone call, he remembers someone interrupting their conversation. So someone else is home with Jennifer during that time, because she stops in the middle of the conversation and says, "Stop, I'm talking to my dad." And he remembers that voice sounding like a woman's voice. Uh-huh. And the only other woman that lived there was Joey's mom, but Joey had a sister, so she would have access to the house too, but she didn't live there at the time. She actually lived in another city, like 45 minutes away. And so Jennifer had also told my mom that week that Joey's mom was off work, that she was taking vacation. So I assume that it was his mom. Mm-hmm. That's never been confirmed. I can't confirm that. So that's just my assumption. But I do know that the Bentons have told, we had this old chat forum called Topics back in the day. Mm-hmm. And it was like small town chat room. And so I remember, like, my family and the Benton family would, like, get in there and talk about the case and what happened, and there was, you know, a lot of tension too between our families. But I remember Joe, his dad, saying that they had a court case that week that was going on, completely unrelated, where someone had stolen something from them, but they had a couple days where they were in court that week, and I don't know what days, but, you know, potentially his mom was home that day going to whatever court hearing. I don't know. But there's another phone call that potentially happened. I don't have phone records from back then. Of course, law enforcement does, but they don't share a lot with me. because our case is still considered active and open. Mm-hmm. There's no cold case unit in Tennessee for any of our agencies. So cases just stay open until they're solved. Mm-hmm. So I can't confirm this. They've only confirmed with me the 11 o'clock call, but my aunt says that she remembers having a job interview that she had to go to at 1 o'clock. And she was about to run into that interview, but she gets a call from Jennifer. And Jennifer tries to, like, start getting into everything that happened the night before. And my aunt's like, sorry, I can't stay on the phone long. I got to get in here. And she's like, but I'm going to leave you a key. So I'll leave it in the grill out back on the deck. So if you need to, come there. So she had told her about a little bit about what was going on and that things were so bad. And so my aunt was like, I'll leave you a key if you need to come to my house, which, again, is just 2 miles or so down the road. Right.
Just giving her a safe place to go.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Which that's really important because his story basically is like she calls some random person, but we'll get into that. So that phone call may or may not have happened, but in Franklin, Kentucky, at the job site that Joey's working on with my cousin that day, Joey gets a call in the middle of the day on Thursday. I don't know exactly what time that call is either, but he gets a call and goes up to the foreman on the job that day and is like, I'm sorry, I've got a family emergency. I've got to go. And he goes up to my cousin and he's like, dude, we got to go. Come on, let's go. And they get in the car. My cousin drives him home. And I mentioned earlier, like, my family has kind of had a divide over the years after the case was changed to homicide in 2013. Mm-hmm. Our family just kind of split apart because my cousin was so close to Joey. He was real good friends with him, even continued hanging out with him after their disappearance. He just didn't believe, like, his friend had anything to do with it, you know, and just continued being his friend after. And I think just, you know, being that close to the other side, I think it just kind of caused this divide in our family. So we haven't really spoken to them, but a couple years ago when I picked up the case, I did get in touch with my cousin and I had a real good conversation with him, but he can't remember anything. Okay. He does not remember what they talked about on the way home. And if it were me and probably anyone else listening to this, if someone just walks up to you and they're riding with you and they're like, we got to go, and you're in the middle of work and it messes with your money and your livelihood, like, you would be like, why? You know, what's going on? But he doesn't remember asking any of those things. He doesn't remember asking it on the 30-minute drive home. And then he doesn't even remember, you know, dropping him off at home. He's like, I could have, you know, we could have driven back to my house and then Joey got a ride from there. He's like, I don't remember.
That is a little crazy. Like, you're right. Like, it's his cousin that's dating his friend, and there's an emergency, and they need to go home. You think you would ask a lot of questions, like, oh, is my cousin okay? Is my, you know, is Adriana okay? Like, what's going on?
Right. So, I don't know. You know, I try to give a little bit of grace because I do know that memory comes into play. It's been 20 years. And also, like, this whole experience for 20 years has affected so many people in so many different ways.
Yeah.
And, you know, just, I'm always see things from every perspective kind of person. So, you know, has it affected him and where he's just blacking that part out? Like, I don't know. He told me on that call the day I spoke with him, he's like, it's probably in my original statement. He's like, I just honestly can't remember. Which of course I don't have access to his original statement. So I don't know what the family emergency was. I don't know who called him. I don't know if it was my sister calling, like your mom's being rude to me again today. You need to get home. Like, I don't feel safe. Like, I don't know if it was something like that. I don't know if it was his mom or dad and something had already happened to my sister and my niece, you know, or if they were like, come home and get this girl out of our house. Like, I don't know what it was.
Right.
And I'm still working on that part. In the last couple of weeks with everything that's been going on with the Benton family and charges and everything that were brought, I have a little bit more of an idea and just some more information. But until I have, like, really concrete information, I don't, you know, like to put that kind of thing out there until I know for sure. But I don't know. I just know that there's only a couple scenarios. It was either my sister calling or it was his mom or dad.
Mm-hmm. And so let's talk about that real quick. So that, you know, it's breaking news. It was all over everywhere. Yeah. I was getting phone calls from reporters and everybody, and I'm like, oh my gosh, this is amazing. So almost 20 years to the day, right? So like March 27th, so just a couple of days after.
It was 20 years on, it was exactly 20 years on the day that we reported Jennifer and Adrian missing, yeah.
See, that's little, you know, I am not a coincidence girl, but that's a little bizarre, right?
Yeah, I'm also not a coincidence. I'm not like the kind of person that's like, everything happens for a reason. That's not me. You know, but I couldn't help but feel that way. I still feel that way. There's so many things that are like unfolding after that day that I don't know, like it just kind of feels like it is happening for a reason. Yeah. And I don't know what. But yeah, we can talk about that day. If you want me to, I can jump into that now.
Well, you know, immediately, well, we can go into that, but immediately the first thing that I know is that, and I think you can confirm it, is like how many explosives and weapons were found on the property. And it goes back to, you know, Jennifer and Adriana not being safe there, you know, ever.
Exactly that. Yes. So if the family is capable of that, which everyone that knows that family knows, like, that they have access to those things, everyone knows it. There are other family members that all their properties butt up to them. They all know it's not safe over there. You know, so it wasn't safe for Jennifer and Adriana then. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that just confirms it. You're exactly right. I mean, I think that Joe Benson, Joey's dad, got like 45 charges for illegal weapons and explosives on the property. And I don't know what kind of explosives they were or what kind of weapons they were. A reporter in the area, he's like a local reporter. He is good friends with our family after all these years. Not really good friends, but like he's covered our case. Mm-hmm. And we saw him, and he followed up with us after that and is still covering everything. And he told us that whatever they took from the property that day, that, you know, they had to take it to a landfill nearby and detonate it and set it off. And so many people talked about hearing explosives that live close to that. And they didn't know that it had anything to do with this property. But my family stayed there on March 27th until like 9-10 o'clock at night. I watched them wheel something down in this big wagon, put it into the back of this truck that had a trailer on the back, and then they took the trailer somewhere. And I don't know exactly what it was, but we were there and the ATF was there. Those are, you know, people for explosives, mm-hmm, and weapons and everything. And they came over and pushed us back because we were across the street a little bit, in like the volunteer fire department. It's just right across the street. And I guess we're too close. The news crews and everything were interviewing us there. And they came and pushed us back. And they were like, you're going to have to move further back. It's unsafe. Yeah. And so they were working like, I think like a 1700 perimeter or something, like 1700 foot perimeter. They were evacuating some of the neighbors, not all of them. And I don't know, it was a crazy day. And the thing is like, it's middle of the day on March 27th, and my phone, just like yours, starts blowing up. I start getting messages, and I, Amelia, was in the middle of doing things on social media and whatnot for their 20-year mm-hmm anniversary, right? So I'm making posts, you know, like sentimental posts for them and whatnot. And I'm like, these people start messaging me, and my phone starts going off through social media. It's people that don't know me but that live over there. Mm-hmm. And they're like, what's going on? There's so many people. I start getting videos and photos, and there's like so many cars. The SWAT team is there. There's unmarked cars. TBI is there, Robertson County Sheriff's Department, state troopers are there. I mean, tons of cars. And I was like, I don't know what's going on. But of course, my first thought was, like, they're there for Jennifer and Adriana. That was my first thought. I was like, oh my God.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I haven't heard anything from anyone, but of course, they can't always tell me before they do what they're doing, right? So I was like, they found them. And that wasn't the case. Of course, I get a call later on in the day, and they just kind of let us know, like, yes, we have a search warrant. So they had a search warrant. I don't know what that warrant was specifically for. To my knowledge, it was not for the explosives and weapons.
So what prompted that? You know, I wonder, you know, like, what prompted, what put the Bentons on their radar at, on that day, right? To get a warrant, which they never had before, right, to search the property?
I mean, they may have had warrants related to other things that I'm unaware of. We've never had a warrant.
Yeah, that's what I mean, for Jennifer.
Yeah, we've never had one for 20 years. Every search that's been done on their property has been permissible. So, you know, all we were seeing is that they were executing a search warrant, and we didn't know what it was for, and of course we assumed Jennifer and Adriana. And then we find out, no, they call us, and they let us know, yes, we have a warrant, but no, it's not for you. It's not for your case. And we're like, well, you know, while you're there, can you look for them? And of course their answer is, I mean, they're very good agents, very good detectives. And they just said, we'll do everything within our scope of the warrant. The warrants are very specific. Mm-hmm. They give you a specific time that you can be there. They give you specific places you can look. And like, it has to make sense. So like, if you're looking for, you know, a weapon, like, you're not gonna, I don't know, I'm just giving an example, you're not gonna go look in the fridge, you know, like, it's gotta be, like, pertaining to what you're searching for, and that's just an example, but, so I just know they're very specific, and I don't know what they were there for, mm-hmm. you know, of course, I saw all of, like, the ATF and everything, and then they found these explosives we started hearing about, so I assumed that they were there for that, but then, of course, a couple of days later, he gets another charge for sexual exploitation of a minor. And
oh, the dad?
Yes. So he has like 45 charges for these illegal weapons and explosives, and then another one got added a couple days later.
And so you don't know anything more about the minor, though, about like what that was exactly?
So law enforcement has given us zero details and zero communication since that charge has been dropped. Okay. So it very well could have something to do with Jennifer and Adriana, but we don't know. The news stations around here, a couple of them, News 5 and I think 17 maybe, put out articles and said that they were able to get a hold of court documents the day of his hearing. And the first one, News 5, posted that it was a 20-year-old photograph of a minor involved in sexual activity. And, of course, then everyone is in an uproar. The 20-year anniversary of the girl's disappearance, and now a 20-year-old photo. And then everyone's like, it's Adriana, you know, and we still have heard nothing. But then Fox 17 comes out, and they've got their hands on a document. I don't know if it's the same one. I haven't seen the document. But they say that it is a 20-year-old photograph of a minor relative of his involved in sexual activity.
Oh,
and at the time of Jennifer and Adriana's disappearance 20 years ago, the only minor there was his Adriana, of course, and then his grandson was a couple years older than Adriana. So I don't know if it was his grandson being a relative. I don't know if that means, like, if they're associating Jennifer and Adriana as relatives. Like, mm-hmm. I just don't know. Or is it a 20-year-old photograph, but the person in the photo wasn't a minor at that time? It was an old photo of them. I don't know the answer to that.
Right. Wow. I hadn't heard that part.
Yeah.
You know, I interrupted you and jumped ahead because I think I just got too anxious. But what we haven't talked about is when they disappeared and what Joey says happened.
Yeah. So I like to make sure just everyone knows that Thursday after the phone call with Jennifer's dad, that my family on her dad's side or my side has never heard from Jennifer or Adriana again. So everything after that phone call is hearsay and completely his side of the story and mm-hmm. his family's side of the story. Mm-hmm. because everything after that phone call, it comes from him and his family and what they say happened. There have been no confirmed sightings of Jennifer and Adriana, no hits on their socials, no benefits, you know, from the state. I know Jennifer was on WIC at one time and, you know, was getting benefits from them, like nothing. And so after the girl's disappearance, my mom was able to talk to Joey here and there. And in her old journals, there's an entry in there where he tells what happened whenever he got home. And he says when he got home that day, that Jennifer and Adriana were locked in their room. And a lot of people are like, did someone lock them in their room? And I don't think that's what it means. I think it's kind of like the night before when she was talking to mom, like I'm in here and the door's locked, right. You know? So he gets home and says, Jennifer and Adriana are locked in the room. There's no notes on who was home or what time of day it was or anything like that. So still can't confirm any of that. But he says they go for a drive. And on this drive, I don't know if Adriana's with him or not, but on this drive, he says they talk about things and decide to break up. And he makes it sound like it's just like a really friendly decision to break up. They both agree, you know, and I don't know where they drove to or anything like that or what car they were in. But he says they decide to break up and then they drive back to his parents' house. They're sitting in the driveway and Jennifer refuses to go in the house. She doesn't want to live there anymore. She wants to move back into the barn and his parents won't let them. And so she refuses to go back in the house, and then she just looks at him and is like, take me into Cross Plains. And that's where, you know, we live. Mm-hmm. And so he says that he's like, all right. And so they drive from their house to Cross Plains, which this is the important part I mentioned earlier, where my aunt had left out a key supposedly for them. Well, they drive right past her house on the main highway that goes in across Plains. They drive past her house, they drive into town, and then he says they stop at the Food Value, the little grocery store, and Jennifer gets out and goes in. He says he assumes to make a phone call, and it's around 9 o'clock at night, and he says she goes in and is in there for a few minutes and then comes back out. And there were 3 employees working that night. There was a cashier, a bagger, and then the manager. And all 3 of the employees say they do not remember seeing Jennifer or Adriana that night. And no one came in there to use the phone. And so he says that Jennifer comes back out and then says, take me to the Exxon, the gas station. From the grocery store to the Exxon gas station at the interstate, they pass our house.
Okay.
So it's on this same main mm-hmm. road. My aunt lived on that road. Like, her driveway is literally off of it, and then ours is. And so they drive right past our house, where we were at that point in time. You know, Jennifer talked to her the day before, you know. So here she's passing 2 family members' houses that she's been in contact with that day. And he drives right past them and takes her to this gas station. There's only a couple gas stations, but, like, if you're going into Cross Plains from the interstate, it's off of I-65 north, exit 112, Cross Plains Springfield exit. It'll be the first one on the right. It's not there anymore, just a pavement parking lot now. But he says he pulled up, let them out, and then he drove across the street and sat in a church parking lot and waited like 10 minutes. And then a car pulls up, and Jennifer and Adriana get into the back of it. And he doesn't see what kind of car it is. He doesn't see the people that are driving it or if there's 1 or 2 people, and he doesn't see which way they go. But the gas station attendant working that night knows Jennifer personally. She's the only one working. And she says, Jennifer wasn't here.
Wow.
If she saw me, then she would have come in and said hello, you know, while she was waiting for whoever to pick her up. And she said, and I was at the register all night, and it's right up front by the door, mm-hmm. and it's glass. I can see out. She was like, she wasn't here. And there was a surveillance camera at the gas station that night. But by the time that we reported a missing and the police actually get to the gas station to get the surveillance footage, it had already been recorded over. And with that, actually is pretty common for surveillance footage. Mm-hmm. You have to get there pretty quick, because especially back then, I'm sure these days it's different, but back then that was a common thing for it to like kind of record over itself every 24 hours.
Right.
But all he can remember is that it's a white car. So he says he didn't see which way it went or whatever, and he just went home. And the next day on Friday, he says he goes back to work in Franklin, Kentucky, but they finished their job early. And he comes home, and it's like mid-morning, and he's like chilling on the couch. And that Jennifer pulls up in the drive, and she is alone, but she's driving the same white car. This is his second time seeing it, but still he cannot verify what kind of car it is. Is it two doors? Is it four doors? And what make or model? He still can't do it. And he just knows it's the same one. So he says Jennifer comes in, and she's there to get a few things, like a change of clothes. And she's asking for her income tax refund money. So she had worked like a small job in 2003 and had filed for like her income tax refund. And it was supposed to be in that day on the 26th. And so she had it deposited into his parents' bank account. It was like $500, and she didn't have a bank account. And so instead of waiting on a check and having to go through that whole thing, she was like, it's easier and faster. Can I just have it deposited to y'all's account? And so that's what they did. So she was there to get it from his parents. And Joey said, well, my parents aren't home to give it to you. Again, I don't know where they were. Maybe they were at court that day. But they're not here, so you have to come back. She's like, okay, I'll come back and get it tomorrow. And he says that's the last time that he saw Jennifer.
I don't know why I think I remember either seeing this, or we talked about this before, when he says he dropped them off at the gas station, that she didn't even take the car seat. Am I wrong?
No, you're not wrong. They didn't take any of their belongings, he said. Okay. So that's why she was, I guess he tells, you know, that she was coming back the next day to get some things.
Uh-huh.
And of course, some of her things anyway, we don't know if it's all of them, were eventually returned to us after their disappearance, but it was like clothes, and they just basically like picked up everything off the floor and put it in trash bags and gave it back to us. There was trash in there. Like, all, it was just a mess. Like, it was very disrespectful for someone who has a missing family member and just put trash in trash bags and give it to us. But there was no car seat, no diaper bag, my sister's wallet, her eyeglasses, her medicine that she took on a regular basis, just things like that. Like, her poems, she wrote a lot and kept journals and things like that. None of that was returned to us. She also posted on social media recently, I hadn't really shared with anyone before, but she slept with this pillow. It was like, I don't want to say it was nasty, but it was just very old and like dingy. I mean, she was 21 and had slept with it basically her whole life, so like barely had the stuffing in it anymore. But like that, I don't know where that is. But we got things back, like their clothes and like Adriana's Elmo. She had like a little stuffed animal Elmo and really liked Elmo at the time. Her little toys were all returned to us. Her jacket, her only jacket, and some people are like, what? That's her only jacket? But, like, we're talking about, like, a low-income single mom here. Mm-hmm. Like, a jacket that one of our family members bought for Adriana, so we know it's her only one. They didn't take that. And, you know, it was still, like, March in Tennessee can still get, like, cool at night. So, mm-hmm. like, my mom was always like, Jennifer would not leave without these things. She wouldn't leave without Adriana's Elmo. And, you know.
Well, her medicine, that's a huge red flag for me.
Her medicine.
It happened in a couple of cases I know of that the same thing. It's like, you know, right then, like you said, she didn't take her glasses and she didn't take her medicine. That, I mean, to me, that's an immediate sign of something's not right.
Yeah, for sure. He said they didn't take anything. And I mean, just the thought of them like driving around when they decided to break up, like, was Adriana in the car? You didn't have her car seat. And I know that, like, most of the time when I would see them, I remember seeing them in his parents' car. They had a Ford Explorer, a black Ford Explorer. And so he had like this little Ford Ranger truck, but it was in the shop at the time. And of course, Adriana's car seat wouldn't go in that. And so they would, if they were going somewhere where Adriana was with them, they would always take the Ford Explorer. So I assume that's what car they were in. Mm-hmm. But it just is weird to me that the car seat wouldn't be in there. Like, did they take it out every time? It wasn't like a booster seat. She was a baby, mm-hmm. you know? It's not easy to put the car seat in and out, you know? So that day when they were going for a drive, like, and then she refused to go in the house, it just doesn't seem likely to me that the car seat wasn't there and she would just get in someone else's car without a car seat. It just doesn't sound right, you know?
And this is no disrespect to Jennifer at all, but she seemed to be, you know, dependent on people. Mm-hmm. So the fact when they left, you would think immediately, like you said, she would have gone to her aunt's house or to your house because that's what she knew. And that's, you know, I mean, she needed some help. She needed help, you know, financially. She needed housing. And so if she's going to be, if she's being kicked out of Joey's or if she's leaving Joey's, she knew she had a stable home to go to, two of them at that point. And like you said, they passed right by them to go to the Exxon and for her to get into a car with, someone that he doesn't know.
Yep. Yeah, exactly. And of course, after their disappearance, you know, we called everybody that Jennifer knew, literally everyone. I have notebooks of where my mom just has names written down. Some of them I don't even know, and like phone numbers beside them where she's like called this person, you know, spoke to them, haven't seen Jennifer, called this person, just lists of people. And I mean, it's people that, I mean, I remember Jennifer being friends with or dating or whatever years before, you know, but it's like my mom just like grasping, like, well, would she have called this person, you know? Mm-hmm. And I mean, it's just awful just seeing like how much work she put into it and how hard, you know, she tried to like literally find her and just exhaust all options of who could have picked her up. And there's just no one.
Right.
At the end of the day. But so on that Friday, after he says he saw Jennifer, that night they had a bonfire planned with their friends. And Jennifer was supposed to be there. It was a couple's thing. So it was Joey and Jennifer supposed to be there, my cousin Jeffrey and his girlfriend, and then another couple. And of course, Jennifer wasn't there. So after Jennifer left and he was like, my parents aren't here to give you the money. And she was like, I'll be back tomorrow. Around the time of the bonfire, his dad calls my aunt, who's not home, but calls my aunt's house and leaves her a voicemail message on her answer machine. And it says, you know, call in to find Jennifer to give her her income tax refund money. Heard she was here looking for it. And I always found that kind of strange too, because it's like, if your son said she'd be back tomorrow, like, why are you now, why are urgently trying to find her to give her her money? Like, I don't understand. I mean, maybe that was just like a nice thing he was doing, you know, but it just seemed kind of strange because we had on that Friday evening, you know, my mom started to get worried and she was calling around to our other family members who Jennifer talked to every day, and none of them had heard from her. So this is all kind of happening simultaneously. And she calls Jennifer's granny and is like, well, if you hear from her, have her call her mom. And her granny calls my mom back and is like, Kathy, something's wrong. Jennifer's missing. No one can get in touch with her. And my mom and I were talking about that call recently, and her granny has since passed away, but in the last couple of years. But like, what prompted her to call my mom and say Jennifer's missing? I don't know. But like, Jennifer's grandparents, her granny Wicks and granddaddy Wicks, like, they, I don't want to say we're friends with the Bentons, but they had a good enough relationship where they could pick up the phone and call them. So I don't know if they called and talked to them, or if my aunt talked to her granny and then that prompted that call. I don't know what, but that's kind of what started my family like panicking. So at the time he's calling and leaving this voicemail to give Jennifer her money, even though she said she'd be back the next day, my family's already like panicking. No one can find Jennifer and everyone's gathering at my house and driving around looking for her. And we're calling the Benton's phone. We're calling their home phone. We're calling Joey's cell phone and no one's answering. And then he just randomly calls my aunt and leaves that message. I just find it odd. And then at this bonfire that they're having around that same time, my cousin Jeffrey's like, where's Jennifer? She's supposed to be here. And Joey's like, oh, she's at a friend's house. Hmm. And so that was kind of like when things start to kind of be inconsistent, because that's the first time that he tells anyone where Jennifer is. She's at a friend's house. And then later, whenever we call the cops that Friday night, it's starting to get later and no one can really find her. No one knows where she is. Joey finally answers the phone, and it was my other sister, Heather, called, like, finally got him on the phone. We had been blowing his phone up, and he answers. And my sister's like, "Where's Jennifer? No one can get in touch with her." And he's like, "I don't know where she is. We broke up." And that's, of course, whenever we're like, "Oh, no, something's wrong." And my mom calls the cops, and they come over and get our statement and everything. And it, like, rolls over into Saturday. But they go over to the Benton house, like, on Saturday at some point. I don't know exactly what time they go there, but they go over there to, like, do, like, a welfare check for Jennifer and Adriana after we made our statement. And Joey answers the door, and he says, you know, "My parents aren't home." And then the police officer takes his statement. That's whenever he tells that, I went back and read the statement the other day because I have that original police report, and he kind of, like, stumbles around with his story, and it's literally written down like he's stumbling. And the officer says, like, "I started asking questions about Jennifer and Adriana's whereabouts." And it says, at first, Joey says he dropped them off at a friend's house. And then he says, "No, never mind, that's not right." And then he says, "We broke up. I took her and dropped her off at the gas station." And the officer's like, "Which one?" And he says, "I can't remember." And then he says, "Oh, wait, I remember, it's the Exxon station." And so there's, like, him, like, fumbling with his story in this police report, you know. And then that's whenever the whole white four-door, he gives the description of the car at that time. He says it's a white four-door Camaro or Mustang. And it's literally written in the report. And this dude owns a Mustang. Like, he literally has one sitting in his yard. You know, he knows it doesn't exist. And so I'm not sure why he would say that. But that's where that comes about. And then earlier the previous night, he told my cousin that, "Oh, she's at a friend's house." Mm-hmm. Like, just, you know, not, "We broke up," not, you know, "Oh, she had some friend pick her up. I don't know who it was. You know, I hadn't heard from her," like, nothing. Just, "She's at a friend's house." And so just inconsistent stories starting in the very beginning. And that officer comes back to our house, and he's like, "Something's wrong." Like, there's too many inconsistencies. He's like, "I'm calling it in." And he's like, "Something's not right." So he said whenever he was there, and he said, "My parents aren't home," and he gives the story, and the officer's like, "Well, I need to come in and check." And he's like, "If you want to come in, you need to come back with a warrant."
Wow.
And that's written in the report too, that he literally says, like, if you want in, you need to come back with a warrant.
And how old was Joey at this time? 21?
I believe he was also 21, yeah. And so just a young guy at home, just with the door cracked open, you know. And then that officer comes back and is like, "Just, something's not right." He's like, he's given inconsistent stories. He told me I need to come back with a warrant. And then he calls it into his superior. And that's whenever they put the be on the lookout for Jennifer and Adriana. Just, and a be on the lookout is like if someone really did pick them up in this car, right? Mm-hmm. So they're like operating off of his story in the beginning, and which is just so wrong. It's like the last person that sees them and is giving inconsistent stories. Like, I understand, like, please be on the lookout, kind of like an Amber Alert. But like, an Amber Alert was a thing then too, but Adriana didn't qualify because she was with her mom. And, or supposedly with her mom, yeah, according to this guy, you know. And of course we didn't get that. So, I mean, we're thankful for be on the lookout, but it's like from the very beginning, it was almost treated like, "Oh, she'll be back." And they even told my mom that a couple times, "She'll be back," you know.
Even after his story, they believed that she was just had gone off.
Yep. That she had just left on her own. Yeah. Yeah. They did. And so they came back, law enforcement did, on Sunday, the next day, with no warrant, but asked if they could look around, and the Bentons agreed for them to look around. And I don't know where all they went and what they looked at, but they you know, did their first walkthrough. And of course, that's just a permissible walkthrough. There's no forensic anything. They're not taking samples or anything like that that you see on TV. They're literally just walking through looking for signs of foul play. Mm-hmm. And there's none. And at this point, Amelia, it had been like 3.5 days since what I believe happened on Thursday. So
there was,
you know,
plenty of time.
Yeah, you think about the show 48 hours, like, we've already lost that time. It's too late.
Yeah.
You know? You know, and not to accuse anyone, like, we're never doing that. It's just, y'all were the last ones to see them. You know, like, we, that's the first place we need to be sure that they're not there. And we've never been able to be sure about that because we've never been able to get a warrant. There's been no, like, you know, actual full-on search of their property. They have like 6 acres, but at the time that Jennifer and Adriana disappeared, they were living in that little brick house, and his parents were starting to build a house right next door.
Okay.
On 5 acres, like in this wooded lot. And that property is the property that they were at this year on March 27th doing the raid, and where all the explosives and everything were found. So at the time, they were like getting the foundation work done, pouring, you know, the foundation and the septic and septic lines and all of that. And so there's a lot of speculation about that part, you know, the concrete and the foundation and all of that. And the septic has come up quite a bit recently too, as far as like, if they were responsible, could Jennifer and Adriana be there?
Uh-huh. Oh, so, I didn't know any of that. That's really fascinating.
Yeah, it is. I actually have, which the septic paperwork, oddly, they did not pull any of the required permits to do anything as far as building their house in the beginning and the digging for the septic and installing that. So they didn't have any of their permits. And I have the original paperwork. There was septic lines dug and septic tank installed and never used. And then the guy who came out, I've actually spoken to him, who came out and like issued them their citation or whatever for not doing it properly. I have the map of where the new septic system was dug and installed. And it's just odd that there's like two of them there, but one of them's not being used. Do you know what I'm saying?
No, exactly. Yeah, that's, I'm actually mind blown right now. So there's like a new septic tank that they put in, and then they didn't have the right permits, and so they're not allowed to use it. So it's just still there.
Right. Yeah, it's still there. And my mom tells me, which I don't know if anyone listening or if you saw, you can see like the aerial of their property mm-hmm. with the raid on March 27th. But there are so many structures on their property and so much just junk everywhere.
Yeah.
So it's kind of hard for me to like look at like this this map of this septic and just kind of tell where it is on their property. But my mom says that where that old septic system is like where their big giant building is now that they poured concrete over and like built a building. So it's not actually under the house or anything like that, but like kind of to the side.
Okay.
And law enforcement has confirmed they've done a search in the past where they've actually checked like a part of their foundation, like these columns that are underneath. And I talked to someone who helped pour their foundation, and he was like, yeah, there's those columns, but he's like, underneath like the perimeter of the house is like feet of concrete. And he was like, there's no way they could have checked those without like digging it up, you know? So I don't know how thoroughly everything was checked whenever they come out to do that. And I know that there was a scent dog that was run on that Monday after their disappearance. And that was kind of like Summer Wells' disappearance, where in Sebastian Rogers, which is current in our area right now, like where a scent dog is just trying to see like if you walked off. Like, if you walked into the woods, right? Because their property is a wooded area. Uh-huh. And, of course, that come up nothing. So there have been, like, a few searches over the years, but, like, nothing has ever come of any of it.
I wonder, is it, you know, if they had, like, a ground-penetrating sonar if they could check under that concrete.
Possibly, but we can't
get a warrant.
Do that without a warrant. Yeah. So yeah, we actually, and that reminds me, a couple years ago, I picked up the case. I think it was right around the time you and I probably talked last. And we had a search planned. We were actually invited by Joey's grandfather. His wife had passed away, so Joey's grandma had passed away. It was just him, and he wasn't in good health. And he invited us to come search, and his property is about 50 acres, 51, I think. And it backs right up to Joe and Joey and Cindy's property. Mm-hmm. They're 6 acres. And so he was like, come and search our land. He invited us. So we did. And we put a team together. We had, I don't know, probably like 5 to 7 or 8 dogs out there, and like an actual search team, search and rescue, and their dog handlers. And I mean, we spent a couple days out there, and they actually did hit on human remains out behind his grandfather's house in the woods. And we called law enforcement, and law enforcement was like, dig it up. And we were like, what? You know, we don't want to like mess up anything. Right. You know, there, if it's them, like, we don't want to like make anything inadmissible or anything like that, tamper with evidence. And they were like, well, this is not a warranted search, so dig it up. So they just said, it's not a search that we're doing. It's not a sanctioned search, they said, so just do it. So we did. And my private investigator, like, got a backhoe, went out there, dug it, and there was nothing. And since then, the grandfather's passed away, and Joe Benton, Joey's dad, inherited that land.
So I have a question for you. I'm sorry to interrupt you. The grandfather, when he gave you guys the permission, do you think he knew or speculated something was there, or you think he was like, you're just free to search, go ahead?
You know, I've put a lot of thought into that, and I don't know if it was like he was just getting up there in age, and before he passed away, he just wanted to clear his conscience and like all of that, you know, I don't know. I think maybe a little bit of both. I think it's a little bit of like, I think their family like even didn't want to expect that of them, like that they could be capable of that. But when Jennifer and Adriana didn't show back up, they're like, you know, so I think that's sort of what happened over the years. Is like, I don't want to speak for them, but that's just me kind of speculating. I think that's more of what it was like. He just wanted to clear himself of that and be like, I let y'all search, you know? But yeah, we always wondered after that, like, because digging with a backhoe, like if there were like bone fragment or teeth or, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it wasn't sifted through. There was no forensic anything done at the soil, you know, and we tried, but there wasn't anything done. They could have been there at one time and then moved.
Right.
We just don't know, but I literally have like videos of dogs like indicating in the woods, like in the same spot, different dogs. They, after one does it, they bring out another one to confirm it, right? And so I have a few different videos. It's just strange, and I don't know, and we'll never know now until, you know, we're able to get back on that property if they were ever there, or someone else for that matter. But yeah, it's just strange. And that day that we did that search, Joe Benton came out into the woods. We had to pull our search team out, but he came out there and interfered with the search. You know, was yelling at them like, get off my property. And so we had to pull our team out of the woods, and they're way off in there. It's 50 something acres, you know.
Yeah.
And so just real inconvenient. Joey showed up that day at his grandparents' house, which is where we were kind of stationed. And he showed up that day to interfere, tried to get his granddad to say that he wanted us to leave, because permissible searches, you're allowed to be there until the person's like, all right, get off my property. And so he was trying to get his granddad to do that. And our detective actually showed up that day, whenever Joey showed up, and because they called the cops on us, the Bentons did, and said, you know, we're not supposed to be there, whatever. But of course we had a letter signed by him and his permission, and so we weren't asked to leave or anything. And then we came back and dug, and then there was nothing there. And I'll always wonder if something was there, you know, until we're able to prove it. And I'm so hoping, Amelia, that what's going on right now You know, even though the search warrant was unrelated to us, and then the sexual exploitation of a minor, if it is truly a relative, which I haven't had confirmation from law enforcement, but like, I'm just hoping some way, somehow this ties to Jennifer and Adriana, and we're able to get that search warrant, so we can at least eliminate that property. Like, over the years, like, my family and law enforcement have talked, and we're like, they're inviting us at times onto this property. It's almost as if they know they're not here, you know? So mm-hmm. like, sure, come on and search. But, you know, and then sometimes we're like, no, it could just be like a confidence thing. Like, you know, they're under that septic system or so far down, like yeah. a dog can't, you know what I'm saying? So I don't know. I go back and forth on that, but I'm hoping all of this ties our case somehow and helps us get that warrant.
Me too, Casey. I have a feeling that something, I don't know, it's just my gut, I guess, that there's a reason they're there. And I mean, and like you said, they keep tacking on more and more charges to, you know, Joe Benton. And so,
and I don't think it's the end of those charges. I just really don't think it is.
Right.
I think that if there's one photo, there's more.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, I don't have any of that information, but just the fact alone that, like, we are reaching out to, like, our TBI agent and the sheriff's department detective, and they're like, we don't have an update for you right now. You know, I just keep taking that to mean, like, something along the lines of what you just said. Like, I just have a feeling, like, mm-hmm. they're like, I don't have an update for you right now. You know, like, uh-huh. please hold on, you know, but I just can't tell you. I almost get a feeling that that's what they're saying. It's not like a, sorry, this has nothing to do with you, I don't have an update.
I think you're spot on with that too, because I've talked to enough TBI agents as well that you know when they're not doing anything, and then you also kind of know when something is happening, and you can
right.
get that feeling from them. And then, like you said, like them saying, I don't have an update for you right now, well, what would they be updating you on if there's not something to update? Does that make sense?
Right. If they could be like, well, you know, no, unfortunately it didn't turn into anything, they're not saying that.
Right. Right.
You know, and that, I don't know, is that me being hopeful? I don't know. You know, I mean, it could legitimately have absolutely nothing to do with us, but I, like, deep down in my heart, I'm like, that image that you found, like, if that doesn't, you know, with everything going on with Adriana and her little infection, and
yep.
yes, it can be caused by something else, but seriously, this photo that you signed does not relate to our case whatsoever. Like, I just can't see that happening. Like, I just can't. If we've never been able to get a warrant before because there's no physical evidence, everything in our case is circumstantial, and it's because only those people know about it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what it is something only they hold the answers to, and that's why we have no physical evidence. And I cannot fathom that this photo and his current charge doesn't turn into more and somehow relate to our case. I just don't see it.
Right. I agree with you, and we're all pulling for you and waiting with bated breath.
Thank
I mean,
you.
I feel like the other day, like, or, you know, a couple weeks ago, I guess it was that long ago, it was the 27th. I was like glued to my phone, like, oh my gosh, what's happening? Like, I was just really hopeful for you, and I still feel hopeful, like you said.
Yeah, thank you. I think, you know, he has some, like, follow-up hearings. So that one charge for the photo was added on April 5th, and I know that there's, like, some follow-up hearings that are coming up. There was actually one today, a disposition today, which is basically where they just read him all of his charges.
Mm-hmm.
And they appointed him a public defender at his April 5th hearing. And so, and I think that there's one tomorrow. So prior to the raid, he was already in jail at the time for domestic assault.
Oh.
And also violation of probation. Because before his grandfather passed, like, or before his dad, sorry, Joey's grandfather, before his dad passed away, there was actually an assault charge from his grandfather, or from his dad, sorry. That was pending, and so he was on probation for that. And so he got a violation of that. He was in jail for that with no bond. And then this new domestic, which I don't have confirmation what that exactly is about, but I'm told it has to do with his wife. And so I feel like there's just some falling out happening inside that home and inside that family. And, you know, some of the hearings that's going on have to do with those prior things. And I think, like, the hearings for the illegal weapons and explosives and this new one for the exploitation of a minor, I think those will come even later, like at the end of May or June even. So we're going to be waiting for a hot minute.
Yeah. And that charge on the child exploitation of a minor, it's still pending, right?
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, it is.
Okay, I don't know. I thought I heard you say earlier that that charge got dropped, but no, it's still there.
No.
Okay.
Yeah, it's still there. That's the newest one that had been added, and I think his hearing for that is in June. And I know that his bond right now is a little bit over $2 million. I think last I checked, it was like $2,075,000 or something.
Wow.
So, yeah, I don't know. I just think that we're going to be waiting, and we've waited 20 years. So, you know, the last like couple weeks since March 27th, that waiting has been a little bit excruciating.
Mm-hmm.
Just feeling like it had just the ups and downs, like feeling like, oh my God, it's Jennifer and Adriana, then finding out it's not. And then hearing about this 20-year-old photograph and then finding out it's a relative. But is it Adriana as a relative? We don't know. So there's just ups and downs, and we've just kind of been like stuck in this waiting, you know?
Yeah. Well, I can't thank you enough for coming back on. Like I said, I wanted everyone to hear it straight from you, everything. And I knew that, like, since we talked last, some new developments and some, you know,
yeah,
there were some changes. And I really can't thank you enough for taking up more time and telling this story that you must be telling having to tell over and over for the last 20 years. So
yeah.
Thank you so much for coming on.
Yeah, definitely. I'll tell their story to as many people as I can for until I find them. So yeah, definitely. And thank you for sharing it for us and staying on top of the updates and everything. I appreciate it.
Yeah, you've done an amazing job.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Murder at Land Between the Lakes. Music by Indy 44. Produced by Discrepancy Podcast. Hosted and edited by Lainey Sullivan and Amelia Courtney.